This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550. Gonna be
that in. Well, I guess I want to ask again. Is there hope? If it's no, I've got reverse AFC power rankings right here. We've got that NFLPA survey. We've got, of course,
F minus?
F minus.
I didn't even know that was a real thing. I haven't been to school in a while. But
F minus.
F minus.
I like this point. F minus to me seems like just, you know, like a cartoon.
Right.
Not a real.
Yeah,
F is the lowest.
Yeah, it's like Bugs Bunny the teacher. Like, what are we doing here?
F minus.
The show ever sounded older?
The Bengals food.
See, kids, Bugs Bunny was a cartoon character.
The Patriots plane.
Right.
And
the Bills plane. Ashtrays in the armrests of the seats. Imagine that.
Bills players are upset that they're cramped while the coaches sit in luxury.
Mm-hmm.
F or F minus?
F minus. That was an F minus. I'm pretty sure that's where the F minus came from.
Did you see what head coach got?
I don't remember the grade. I did see, if you go in there, it's like he's got an 88% approval rating, I guess, amongst the players surveyed.
B, which ranked 27th.
Really?
That's what I'm saying.
All these other wow.
Are they all afraid?
Yeah.
Like they all just love their coaches?
That can't be right.
Dan Quinn got an A+.
Well,
he's that cool.
They showed up and, you know, changed everything over there. I mean,
I guess that's right.
I could get that.
You have to like him.
It's like a tsunami of positivity that has rolled through Washington with him getting there. It's the, you know, the ownership and the quarterback and everything else, but he's riding a wave right now. But yeah,
McDermott got a B, which ranked 27th. Are there scales of B? I mean, there's B plus, there's B minus,
yeah.
But like of all the Bs,
right.
Are they all tied? Or is like a B point this, B point this?
I don't know how that works, and I'm not sure how, like, if there are percentages attached to all of these. I just saw someone subtweet that whole storyline and say if you go in there, McDermott has like 88% of the Bills players surveyed, approve of him.
27th.
Yeah, that's not there's only 32 teams for now.
So, you're saying, I think, there's still no hope for you. You've given up. You want to talk NFLPA? You want to talk about how the Bills rank in dining?
You can
instead of the Sabres.
I don't know. I am trying. I am trying. I liked Paul's layout of the Lindy framework, the Lindy plan.
Yesterday?
Yeah, during pregame.
It was a nice, spirited conversation.
Five game increments. 7 out of 10 points, 3-1-1. Like, we do that, we can get there. Like, we'll give ourselves a chance if we can get there. You know, I don't know why you got to settle for, you know, losing 2 out of every 5 games, but, you know, okay.
Or 1.5.
Sure, to be more fair, sure, you get a
I thought it was supposed to be one game at a time.
Right? Yeah, I don't know.
No, but why I like it, if I may, is, and this would be, you know, useful for fans, and that's maybe why you like it. Sort of it lays it out for fans that it's not as remote a possibility as you might think. The funny thing about 1%, which is where we've been, 1% during that break to make the playoffs,
yeah,
the graphics, the asteroid.
The asteroid. Better chance of asteroid crashing into Earth.
The thing about 1% is it's not zero. And in, was it 2011, the year they made it last?
Yes.
Or the one year, a couple of years later, where they were also way back and they got there. They won a game in Washington, and they got there and they fell back again.
I think that was the following year. I think that, okay, that was the year after they had that incredible stretch run.
Well, it certainly was like pre-Reinhardt, which was 14, so it had to be before, yeah, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But 1% is not zero, which is not to represent false hope. It's just to say 99% is not 100,
right,
and 1% is not zero. So, you know, you keep playing, and that sort of five-game breakdown, you know, analysis, I guess, might be helpful to players.
You asking me that yesterday, maybe more than once, and again now at the outset today, you asking me that question had an impact on me. Because I feel like of the two of us, for many of these seasons, you've been way more at aren't like I'm
so done,
and I'm not bragging here. I mean, I watch. This year there have been stretches. I'll admit, over the holidays I was off, and I didn't miss them while I was gone. You know, like I didn't feel compelled to be in front of the TV every night recreationally. I didn't need to know what happened to talk about it if there would be anything worth talking about on the show. So I just sort of let them be over there. And when that happens to me, that's happened a couple other times much earlier in the drought. I can remember talking about being at Holiday Twin Rinks for a Regals practice and just not caring about the Sabres game on the giant TV in the lobby there because I'm just dead inside, kind of.
That happened to me like a month ago, by the way. Jersey.
But when you asked me that, I think like, what are you know, should there be? Should I? All right. I wanted to watch that game last night. I loved how they played great in the first period and got a 5-on-3 goal against, and then weren't very good in the second, but I stayed in there. Like, you want to get me back? All right, you want me to be paying attention to you? Beat Anaheim, okay? And they, you know, they managed to get there. They played a great third period. So I don't know. I guess I can't say I'm ambivalent about it because I cared about them coming back last night. You know, I don't just tweet garage however many times in a row that is in a close game at the end with the Sabres leading.
By the, you don't know how many times it is?
I don't know.
Is that a copy paste? It is.
But I've never counted. I have never counted.
All right.
I just did it one time.
14.
Okay. Like, I really want them to win the game because, you know, the only way you're going to get there is to win a bunch in a row here or, you know, go 3-1-1. Six times or five times or whatever.
And then win the last three right, to get to 90, which right, is maybe.
Right. So, you know, as long as you can keep me, stay out of the ditch here with losing streaks, and we'll see how the 3-1-1 thing goes. I cared enough to notice today, a lot of games last night, went through and like, oh, great, Detroit won. Oh, great. Columbus won. Oh, great. The Rangers won. Like, everybody won.
I made a note a half an hour ago after what this all was yesterday that guess who told me today what happened in the rest of the Eastern Conference? So you're not totally dead.
Right.
To be redundant. Dead is totally dead. Dead. You're not dead.
Dead is not looking.
They're not dead.
Dead is not looking at the other scores.
What they... It is a long time ago, and it might sound ridiculous, but I think it's okay to have hope. even if it does. And last night, the whole game reminded me of 2011 when Pegula bought the team. And they were dead like this. I remember one day, 14 years ago, sitting in here. No cameras then. Cameras had not been invented back then on radio. But just railing on Jochen Hecht for a bad effort in Calgary. Like, this thing is so... It's Lindy's the coach, and it was just, you know, they had the fluke year in 10, I would call it. Two prior years where they missed... You know, then you have the Drury Brière debacle and everything from their ancient past now. In 11, they trudged through 50-some games and were nowhere. The sale happens, I don't know, kind of right around now.
Mm-hmm.
And they just won all the time. And I think of Vanek the most. He's the guy I think of for that.
Yeah.
Because Vanek, like, there were a couple of home games, one against the Lightning, I want to say, where they might have been the better team, but they're down. And last night I thought of this, because last night they were always the better team in that mm-hmm. game. And they're down 2-0 after two. And I wanted to, it's a feels thing, not a data thing, but I admit, like, in my mind was, this, the team I want this team to be somehow wins tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's in a shootout. And it's Vanek going, you know, around the world. Like, even if it's in a shootout, this team wins tonight. The team I want it to be, to give me sort of like, you know, a reason for believing, has to win this game. Home, Ducks, and you're just kind of destroying them, but you're down. And well before the Paterka goal for 2-1, they're all over them. Like, it's just, Come on, get there. And they do before it's too late. I mean, the Joki Haru goal is with, like, plenty of time left.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of time left. Yeah, it never even got to, like, desperation time. It was, like, I thought, you know, when they made it 2-2, I thought they were going to win the game 5-2.
Yeah, there was 10 minutes ago.
Kind of the way it was going. It was a lot of time left, and the Anaheim looked like they had absolutely been, like, taking a punch right on the chin and were wobbling.
Tuck has a chance before his goal where Thompson and Tuck, like, they're on him, comes back down the ice, and then he scores. What was the second Anaheim goal? Were four of the five goals in this game scored from, like, the goal line?
Just about, yeah.
The two last Sabre goals, and then you have the first one. I think both Anaheim goals were... What did you think of the goalie on those? Like, was he slow?
The second one, for sure, I thought was...
Get over there.
Very tough. Yeah.
I'm feeling something.
He must have been... to me, an indication of you're late getting there is if when the play's over... I mean, I realize he knows the puck got through him, but he had to slide so fast that he ends up almost in the corner at the end of that play. And that just tells me he was late getting to his spot.
There was one of those with the goalie pulled, by the way, when Anaheim put the pressure on. Right after they pulled the goalie, they put the pressure on, and he was like, way over here.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, the Anaheim goalie, while we're here, I mean, Dostal made some really great saves in that game, but holy cow, the winning goal, if he doesn't knock his own net up, I don't think that has room to go in.
Four goals in this game were like if you're good. at Darien Lake or something, and you're just sort of shooting for targets, and you're trying to hit that one right up the postage stamp. Like, oh, both the last Sabre goals and then kind of the Anaheim goals were from the same spot. Anyway, I'm a little bit interested.
I feel like, you know, you referenced that run in 11. Maybe I'm gonna look through that season. I feel like I want to know we should know that number 24-3 or something, like 24-3 or 24-4, like whatever it was. Like, it was close to 30 games and they won 20 of them. It was a great run to make the playoffs that year.
Ending with one of the most special nights in the history of the building.
Everybody who ever played for the team was invited back. I don't know that every single person came, but there were hundreds of alumni there.
Yeah, well, there were a lot. I mean, it was really great. 2011. They ended up 43-39. Right now they're 24-32. I don't have time for the overtime losses.
Yeah, right.
That'll be what it is. So to get there, just for a starting point, is 19-7. the rest of the way. Isn't that kind of how we're talking?
That's, yeah.
And that was 96 points. Oof. So, you know, again, it's not going to be perfect because the overtime loss. They had 10 that year. I don't know. It might be too late. That's the problem. Like, it might be too late. But they look pretty good. And I want to say that maybe they are pretty good. Dahlin just never makes a bad play. I hope people appreciate him. That guy has been here only in losing years. I mean, just like Eichel, but he bailed. I mean, Dahlin has been the whole time. You ever hear him complain about it? I don't know. I've never met the guy. I don't know how he thinks. But he just never makes a bad decision with the puck. And I feel like we should appreciate that.
Yeah, I felt like most of the time early in the game and then in the third period again, the second period was kind of just bleh. So, yeah, I give them credit for digging out of that and playing like they did in the first and the third. I felt like, I don't say every time, because lots of guys had good nights and good moments. But, man, I felt like every time Anaheim was on their heels in their own zone for like a minute and a half at the time, it was Dahlin and Byram just like doing circles around the zone. Just the two of them just running the show.
And Byram is just like kind of he's lucky to be out there for that, I think. But, yes. Different forward combinations, yes. Anybody who knows us knows how we feel right now. Like there's a tinge, right? There's a tinge of excitement, but we also don't want to sound like idiots,
right?
Or suckers, not idiots, but suckers. Like, oh wow, they're still in last in the East, and they have a third of the season left. And what are you telling me to buy in? I don't know. I don't want to be telling you that. I mean, they just haven't earned quite that level or that benefit of the doubt, but. They just danced on this team last night, and they've done that a few times in the last month, enough times. It's just a question of if the hole is too big. And these other teams winning, how many of them are Columbus? That's what's really going to hurt. It's not Boston right now. It's not the Rangers or even the Islanders. It's never the Flyers. It's not the Penguins. It's not the teams like sort of the Blue Bloods here that I think you're going to have to come over the top of. It's the Blue Jackets and the Red Wings and the Senators. These are, or even Montreal, perhaps, is like the team. It's those guys. It's not this time. You know, it's like maybe the year the Dolphins won the AFC East in the Brady years with the Wildcat. Like, that couldn't have been me. Brady misses the whole year with an ACL. I'm still 6-10 or whatever I am. Like, that's the year actually where the Bills start 4-0 with Edwards. And that, you know, that falls apart. Yeah. That couldn't have been me. So,
yeah, the fact that it's a year where one of the big teams at the top of the division is sort of in an also-ran position, that's Boston, and you couldn't take advantage of that like Ottawa has. I mean, they're not in a spot today, but it's very close. Detroit has. They're in a spot as of today. Montreal's also not in the spot, but still, they're all ahead of you. And we've been waiting for years for one of those top teams. Like Florida, or for a while it was Toronto, Tampa, Boston. Good luck getting a top three spot in the division. We just pray for a wild card. Now, then Florida's emerged, and like they're just a wagon year over year now. They've sort of supplanted, taken Boston's spot there. So you still have the same problem. You've got these three teams, you know, at the top that are, you know, look like they're going to be hard to catch. And the fact that Boston's down should have been an opportunity for you, but it's not. I mean, down, whatever. I mean, they're in the race. They're in better shape than you. But with that said, like, there's talk about them selling parts off because they're not used to this sort of. It's the trade deadline, and we're not comfortably coasting to a certain first round matchup against the two or the three in the division. Like that's been their life for the last, I don't know. I feel like almost since the divisions got reconfigured.
Well, they should. And if you're one of the other teams, you want for a team like that that's won so much to accept their fate and feel like their fans will accept it because they know they're not a championship threat, and that makes maybe frees them up to do something like that. So that'd be good. The Sabres have their own questions when it comes to the deadline. Like, when is it? Next week?
Next Friday. So, yeah, Zucker, Greenway. Like, what are we doing here? We'll talk to Kevin Adams on Friday. I know when we visited with him last month, I asked him about Zucker and Greenway, and you know it was vague enough, but I mean he did talk about, I think it was more with Zucker, that like we've had some conversations, I've talked to the player, I've talked to his representatives, but nothing's happened yet that we know of. So
may I invoke the Detroit Tigers for this point?
Go on.
May I invoke the Detroit Tigers, attention. Who had not been to the playoffs or had been good in forever, almost maybe like exactly the same year, and they got to the baseball trade deadline last year and they dumped a couple guys like that, and they got hot. They made it anyway. They traded to Texas, I think it was, and Texas slumped, and that's the story you want. That's the story you want. You want to make those shrewd deadline moves as a, you know, seller anyway, and then still win because you can score like crazy. I mean, the Sabres, we figured this out. I didn't know it until last night. But after talking with you and Paul, like, goals per game, they're ahead of the Leafs.
Right.
So give me a couple more saves and keep going. And you got to stay healthy and everything, but I don't know. I'd trade one of those guys, I think, depending on what. Am I getting something interesting or am I just doing it to do it? I'd want to get like a good pick out of it probably, or a prospect. I think that's still how you have to be if you're the Sabres. You still have to be like that. You're not going to spend. We already know they're not going to spend top dollar. So you still have to be future minded. And if it's Jason Zucker or even Greenway, like, due respect, that's a move I make. I mean, maybe not both. I don't know how deep they are or they think they are, but that's something I would do.
I have almost no interest in doing that. Merely because it's not to say that it's not the smart thing to do. The list is so long of guys that there are already like, well, there's a mid-teens first round pick. It's very promising. The pool of I know like Zucker and or Greenway are going to be free to leave for nothing, but I don't know.
They're not first round picks,
no,
are they?
No, I don't think so.
It's a prospect.
I think 10 years ago, maybe, in a world where Paul Gostad was a first-round pick, maybe, it would stun me if they were attractive. And if it's anything but that, I don't know. Like, I don't want to just sit on guys for the wing and a prayer that you're going to win three out of these five and whatever. That you're going to get there. That you're going to approach 90 points here somehow. But I don't know, I'm also not looking forward to talking or hearing from Kevin Adams next Friday about the third round pick they got for somebody. You know, it's just great, you know, golf clap. So this is better, like us even talking this out. I'm not telling you to buy in out there. I don't want to be a sucker. I don't want you to be a sucker. I guess the best way I could say it is they've got my attention. They've got my attention. And a couple of weeks ago, I don't think I would have told you that. A couple of weeks ago, I would have struggled to honestly tell you how I felt about them.
They still have to win two-thirds to three-quarters of their remaining games. And I'm not sure they're good enough to do that. That's what makes the math so tough. But man, last night they were dominant. 6 out of 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued. 803-0550. Well, you, sir, can wait over here. Reverse AFC. Didn't do him yesterday. Travis Hunter can wait. Everybody can wait. Lines are open. What are your thoughts? We'll talk to Chris Trapasso today and every Wednesday through the rest of the season before the draft, the NFL draft, in about 2 months. That'll be at 4 Eastern today, all times Eastern. Also, Sal Capaccio at 5, again, from Indianapolis. We talked about the formidable one. Kenneth Grant.
Oh, that's who that was.
Yesterday. Yeah. And Sal was privy to a conversation with him today. So let's go. Are you buying into the Sabres at all? You can admit it. We don't even know your real names. 803-0550. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
I'd say 3 months ago, it would have been 5-1. loss, honestly. And you just see the maturity, you see the change, you see no one was down. We were pushing each other, we were pressing each other, we were making sure each other were held accountable and making sure we were doing the right things the whole time, and it was contagious. I mean, we had line after line after line going out there and playing the right way, even if they had a good shift against us, because, hey, they got a lot of good players over there, and they're a good team, and they're well coached. So if they're going to come out and we know they're going to have a good shift, we have to have a better one right after that.
Alex Tuck saying that he's seeing changes with the Sabres. 803-0550 if you want to agree with him or disagree. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Chris Trapasso, Sal Capaccio, both from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, still to come today. Today we had the NFLPA survey where players' grades on all different facets of their teams' organizations were made public. I'm looking right now at Warren Sharp tweeting about the Bengals cafeteria.
Right.
Worse than prison. That's his interpretation. Nice. Dead last in taste and freshness.
Not three meals a day available.
Right. Former.
That seems like, I mean, I'm wondering why the Bills cannot figure out their airplane well enough to, you know, assuming it's the actual plane itself and not, I saw Matt Bove from Channel 7 tweeting about how a lot of this year they had to go to Niagara Falls to fly because of construction at the airport in Cheektowaga. Like, you know, that's a longer ride. Like, I don't know. I feel like if you're upset about the travel accommodations, it's less about where the airport is located and probably about the plane itself. Like, get a plane. What are you doing? Like, you're flying 350-pound men around. Get them seats that they fit in. Like, you know, that doesn't seem like a hard one. The cafeteria, that's even easier. Just come on. You pay a chef to have them there. Make some omelets. What the hell?
Former training camp quarterback Reed Sinnett tweeted, "Finished a training camp day, the Bengals, were serving Skyline chili for dinner on the way out the door. Not the fuel I was expecting for pro athletes." To which Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was a Bengal, responded, "Speak for yourself, Reed." To which Sinnett responded, "Ryan Fitzpatrick, body by Guinness and Skyline chili."
Right. Nice.
You know, maybe they're both right. I don't know, but not great for the Bengals. The Bills in this did overall pretty well, but the plane, I guess. The weight room got a high grade. But McDermott
and the training staff
got 27th.
Though. Yeah, right. Sorry. Didn't mean to hop on that.
That's right.
But it's weird that they like the room, but not the training staff. Like, not the staff that...
He was fired.
Right.
They fired the strength and conditioning coach.
Right.
I don't know. I've been in the Kincaid discourse again today.
There's a Kincaid discourse?
There is. Bulldog, in the fantasy world, there is always a discussion happening about Dalton Kincaid. Like, there is always. Enough of us are, like, close to the Bills that we sort of get roped in, and a couple of guys are Bills fans, and just, yeah, it seems like he's a player. There might be five guys in the league like this that... There's always a conversation going about Dalton Kincaid. And I got into that today. I stepped into it. You know, my stuff, like, what was his season high in yards? 52? What was Joe's thing about how 10 different players led them in receiving yards in games this year, none of whom was Dalton Kincaid? They just rewarded Shakir in the slot. Where does all this leave him? You know, his catchable pass rate was really low this year, which is weird for Allen.
Yes.
Like it just was a glaring difference to the rest of the team. Even Coleman. But Kincaid, he couldn't hit him. I don't know. And now they want him to get stronger? What, is he going to play with his hand down now? Seam stretcher Dalton Kincaid, first-round pick, needs to get thicker? That's not going to lead to, you know, an increased depth of target. It's going to be the opposite.
Probably not.
What, they want him to be Alec Anderson now? Or Knox?
Hyperbole much?
I don't know. Like, what? Why is it good?
Oh, I'm not telling you it's good, but I mean, Alec Anderson. Yeah, I don't know where they are. Nowhere with him right now, I think, is where they are. I don't think that that's unfair. I mean, you had a season here that it was absolutely available to them to make him work and for him to make himself work. Like, there was no longer enough. A lot of us thought, I thought, like, Shakir would be their leading receiver among wide receivers. And the reason I would make that distinction is because I thought it was possible Dalton Kincaid was going to catch 95 passes this year. Because the digs, that's gone. So there's no more deferring, right? Everybody eats. Well, someone's going to emerge as a reliable target, someone who's open all the time and available and reliable, going to catch it when it's near him. Probably the weirdest thing about his year is that missed target thing. Like, that Allen was as inaccurate, so disproportionately inaccurate when throwing to him versus anyone else on the roster. I don't have an explanation for that. I don't know if people way smarter than me who study that sort of stuff have an explanation for that. I've not seen or read it yet, if it's out there, but it's just kind of weird.
Well, he had an injury. That's always it's often what gets brought up. And in Kincaid's case, that was true. I think of the play in Indianapolis where he got hurt and then missed time after that, and maybe it was already a problem before that. I don't know. It sounds like there's maybe a level of excuse or excuses that I'm not inclined to make. I've said, and I think most would agree, about this upcoming draft, there was Kincaid in 23 and then Coleman last year. And that was not technically a first, well, not tech, I don't have to say technically. That was not a first round pick, but it might as well have been. You know, they moved down to 33. It might as well have been a first round
pick. It was their top available draft asset. Their first choice was to draft a pass catcher 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and they didn't like the advantage of the guys available to them when it was their pick enough. They didn't even really get much value out of trading with Kansas City. So it ends up on Coleman. And I think the logic there is, well, they won't do that again. I mean, they've just invested 2 years in a row, their top draft pick, on pass catchers. They also won a lot. So it's not like it's been, you know, a complete failure or anything. They've won a lot. And to me, like, this is why they won't do that again. To me, it's like, maybe I'm taking a little bit too casually. Like, it's just so obviously going to be defense because of what they've done the last 2 years. But that doesn't have to be right.
Well, I think a big reason it couldn't be defense, like, I'm inclined to agree with that. It feels like it did, was it 3 years ago now when they drafted Elam and we all were sitting here going, Trey White's coming off a knee injury, you don't have another corner, you're going to have to draft, and they did. And so whether that's corner or end, edge, as the kids say now, or defensive tackle, or even safety, like, they've got, and you can make a case for any one of those spots being the 30th overall pick. But what comes, you know, obviously we're in the midst of the combine now, but free agency is a couple of weeks off. And, you know, the trade market will heat up. There's news today about the Packers possibly being interested in trading Jair Alexander. There's been a defensive tackle from Washington yesterday was talked about. Of course, we've covered Myles Garrett, Max Crosby, whomever else. And that's not even to mention straight up free agents. If they swing a trade for a corner, say, or an edge player or a defensive tackle and check one of those boxes, it doesn't alleviate the need at all those other positions on defense, but it could make you feel like you can put that off with your 30th pick. And if there is a receiver there that you really like, that you could do it. I think you could make the case to do it if you do enough other things. I'm making it sound like just one move. They could make three or four moves on defense in free agency to stabilize any of those spots that are looking needy, and that would alleviate the lack of flexibility that I might perceive them having going into the first round of the draft.
You mentioned that Elam point. I mean, I think about him plenty during the season, whether it's because he's inactive or because he's active and it's not going well. That's how the season ended. You know, we talk about Elam, but I spent a lot of time on the drafts around that one. The Kincaid year where the four receivers went right in front of the Bills and they trade up for Kincaid. Like, they were that, It was that important to them. Laporta goes the next day. Then last year with Coleman, we've spent tons of time on that and what happened with that. The Elam year, do you remember, he was the fourth corner picked in that draft by the Bills at 23.
Yeah, the way the story has been written since then is that McDuffie would have been, like, this is convenient because McDuffie has turned out to be a stud, but like that McDuffie was the guy they really wanted, and go figure, Kansas City got him. And so then they moved up and took, you know, ostensibly what I assume was the next guy on the board.
So Kansas City picked 29th that year, and New England was up at 21. And the Chiefs traded a third and a fourth, and their first. Like, they're 29, a third and a fourth to move to 21 for McDuffie. That feels like a pretty big get by the Patriots.
I want to say that there are certain people that I work with that would have hated that.
I would have hated that, yes. Did you mean Panther?
Oh, I didn't mean you. No.
I would have hated that.
Let's talk about Dan Sontag.
But they moved up, so they traded a third and a fourth to move up 8 spots. And they drafted McDuffie. There were two other corners who were drafted very early. You may have heard of them, Stingley and Gardner, 3 and 4 overall. So the Chiefs make that move, and the Bills traded up too. They traded up 2 spots with Baltimore and gave up a fourth to be able to draft Elam, the fourth cornerback of the first round and the last cornerback of the first round. And then the Ravens at 25 drafted Linderbaum, their center. And McDuffie's excellent.
Yep.
The two guys early, Stingley and Gardner, are excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Elam is probably out.
I can't imagine him being on the roster.
And Linderbaum is excellent.
Nor having any value in any kind of a trade whatsoever. I mean, I just think he's absolutely... I'm not saying some team won't grab him and see, because, you know, first-round picks usually get a second, third chance to prove that they can do it, just wrong situation, whatever. But he's almost got to be done here the way it finished up this year.
The Ravens also drafted Kyle Hamilton in that first round, by the way, earlier.
Like 14, I think.
14?
Yeah.
Is that why... Does he wear 14? Is that why he wears 14?
I don't know. I feel like there's certain players that I remember really liking that sort of their draft position sticks with you. And he's one of them. What a nice player he's become.
Chris Trapasso coming up at 4. Sal Capaccio later. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR. Just when he said he was out, here's Bulldog today with the rundown on how everybody else in the NHL's Eastern Conference did last night. The Islanders lost. How's that working out, Patrick Waugh? Have they been this bad in a long time?
They've been a playoff team mostly, haven't they?
Yeah, plenty of times.
Boy.
25-32, dead.
I might feel like...
Dad, listen to me.
How many points out of the Sabres
4.
Are they? That's a team who I would have a hard time telling you what year over year has looked like, because they're always the same to me. Which means they're usually good enough to get in, and then I think, like, oh, why is that game on when the playoffs start? Like, I don't want to watch the Islanders against anybody. It's going to be the worst game of the playoffs. Like, no. When's there a better game on? When's Toronto playing is usually where I end up when the Islanders do get in the playoffs. So I guess I'm copping out by just telling you I don't keep tabs on the Islanders because they're never a real threat, even though they make the playoffs way more regularly than the Sabres do.
They've lost in the first round to Carolina each of the last 2 seasons and then missed the year before that, but made a couple of runs in the COVID years. You did some research on Carolina. The Sabres play Carolina tomorrow.
The Sabres have not won in Carolina since 2016. And they have only won 3 times, did I say, twice since they last made the playoffs. They won there in 2011.
Grignani.
Right.
Right at the end of the season.
Right.
He scored in overtime to help them get, like, within range of the playoffs. Like, it was a huge, huge win.
April 3rd, that game, they won. Wow, these are not in the right order.
You said 14 and 16 earlier.
Sorry, these games are I'm getting gummed up here. But what I have is that 16 is the last time they won. The rest of it, I want to just take a mulligan on. But 2016 is the last time they won a regular season, well, any game in Carolina.
Who could forget it?
Yeah, I could. I don't remember anything about it.
Just guess maybe what happened.
Yeah.
What do you think happened?
They got horribly outplayed and found a way to win. I mean, I don't know.
15-16 or 16-17, we don't know which.
It's March of 16.
So March of 16.
15-16.
All right, I'm going to find it.
So they're 0-8-2, I believe, since then in that building. And that lines up because they don't play twice there every year.
They won 3-2 that night. Down 2-1 with 4 minutes left. But goals by Kane and Larson, they pulled it out. With Chad Johnson in net. So Chad Johnson is the last... Oh, who do they beat? Chad Johnson is the last Sabre goalie to win a game in Carolina. And he beat Cam Ward. Cam Ward, which is better. Which is the better note? That Chad Johnson is the last winning Sabres goalie in Carolina, or that they have not won there since facing Cam Ward, which is the better note? It's close. I mean, Cam Ward was about done at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he's a football player.
So this is it. I'm sorry. One of the dates threw me off here. But since that Grognani game that you're referencing, the Sabres have won there three times. In total.
Okay.
Since 2011.
Including that game. Right. 14 and 16, you said earlier.
Right. Right.
And 16, this one we're talking about, is the last one.
Right.
Against Cam Ward. Carlo Koliakovo, radio host, scored in this game for the Sabres to beat the Hurricanes. Does he know that? Somebody should tell him that. Tell him I'm saying it. That he scored a goal the last time the Sabres won in Raleigh. Which they will definitely do tomorrow. They're hot.
I guess.
Carolina was shut out by Montreal last night. Did you see that? Weren't they shut out?
I know Montreal won. I didn't pay attention to who they beat.
Look at me with the hockey. Just banging out stuff.
But Montreal was on the list of all the teams that, you know, are ahead of the Sabres that won last night. I wasn't counting Carolina. I was kind of like, you know, whatever. Would have been better for the Sabres if Carolina had won that game.
Oh, well.
Than Montreal.
Anderson in goal. 4-0. 4 goals allowed on 18 shots. I'm ready. What time is this thing tomorrow? 7?
Yep.
All right. At least it's not 8.
You know, I heard Jeremy and Joe talking about this yesterday morning at one point on the Hurricanes, like talking about them as a cup contender. I mean, they've been excellent year over year. And I think Jeremy pointed this out, or maybe it was either one. One of them said, like, Rod Brind'Amour and the Hurricanes, it's a little Bills McDermott-y. Like, they have these excellent regular seasons, and there have been conference finals losses, but there have been first-round losses. They just can't get there. They look really good and are, I think, really good. They have really good seasons, and they just can't win in the playoffs. They can't get past, you know, whoever they need to get past. Boston is often a problem for them, I think.
Well, that's right. They've lost in the playoffs many times in a row here. It's the last 6 years without making the finals, so pretty fair comparison. Chris Trapasso coming up to the NFL Combine after a break. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.